I tried to even my breaths.
You need to be aware that you two have been linked in the press. And it could do one of two things. Undermine your selection to the point that it seems you don't care about it, or...
How could it undermine it?
Well, if it seems like you're abandoning your suitors for him...
Got it. What's the second thing?
It could offer up another suitor, if you're not opposed.
I laughed.
I'm confident the rules of the selection are pretty binding. I don't think I could simply quit it for someone else. Could I?
She shrugged.
He's pretty popular.
Are you advising me to consider him?
No. I'm advising you to be aware that this has become public, and you need to be conscious of how you interact with him, and with the elite.
I can do that, especially since I've hardly interacted with him. I don't want to do anything that might undermine this process. I've already accidentally done that so many times. And I want the people to know this matters to me. I've done nothing to encourage Merid, and I don't think it's worth addressing on the report.
Agreed.
Good.
Only for me would a generous act of kindness be twisted into something scandalous. And, now don't take this the wrong way, but what are you wearing tonight?
I looked down at myself.
I have no idea. I've hardly been able to dress myself.
She studied my clothes.
This will seem like an insult, but trust me when I say that's not how it's intended. I think you need to step it up a little. While the clothes you've chosen or designed in the past have been beautiful, it's time we move on from playing with your fashion to using it as a means of backing up your words.
It felt like a stab to the gut. Thinking of undoing this image I'd made just for me and... turning it into something for other people.
I get that.
What are you thinking?
She crossed her arms, thinking. You could borrow one of your mother's dresses.
I looked at the clock. If I go now, I can pick something. But Nina's the only one who could alter it quickly enough, and she needs to finish my schedule for next week, and I have a lunch date.
She clasped her hands together.
Oh, seriously? As if it wasn't bad enough to have my grandmother tell Fox how cute he is.
Lady Bryce wrapped her arms around herself and laughed.
Did she really?
There's no stopping that woman. It must run in the family. Hurry, go pick a dress.
Okay, send for Hale. I'm sure he's just as skilled as Nina, and I guess we'll find out how fast he is. And make a bullet point list for me tonight. I'm terrified I'm going to blank. I'm on it.
I hurried into the hallway, hoping Mom hadn't been released from the hospital wing yet, because I was going to feel wholly awful if I bothered her by looking for a dress in her room. No more than two steps out the door, I saw Gunner waiting for me. He popped off the bench immediately and bowed.
Hi, is everything all right?
I asked, coming over.
Yeah,
he said.
Well, except that I'm probably about to do something so incredibly stupid that I can feel my heartbeat banging in my feet.
Oh, please don't. I've had enough stupid to last a lifetime.
He chuckled.
No, it's not like that. I wanted to ask you for something.
I raised my eyebrows, proceeding with caution.
All right. You have 2 minutes.
He gulped loudly.
Okay, wow. So, I'm really flattered that you kept me in the top six. It made me feel like I did something right, though I'm still clueless as to what that was.
I shrugged. Your poem made me laugh. Laughter is important. He smiled.
I agree, but it kind of proves my point.
He fidgeted with his hands.
It's just this far in, with you so busy and with me never having had one-on-one time with you, I was wondering how good my chances are.
It's a fair question, but I can't really answer it right now. I have so much to figure out.
Exactly,
he replied enthusiastically.
So, I'm going to ask for something ridiculous. Could I kiss you?
I stepped back.
Excuse me? We don't have to do this if you don't want to, but I think a kiss can say a lot. I think one kiss would be enough for you to know if it's worth me pursuing you, or you pursuing me.
There was something sweet about his request. Like, even though a picture of me kissing Kyle had been plastered across the country, he still didn't think it was a given that I'd just go and kiss anyone. And that he'd learned enough from Jack's expulsion to move with care. That alone made me want to give him what he was asking for. But to do this, to potentially lose a final suitor without even trying to know him better, it felt foolish. You could be a prince. You could have more money than you knew what to do with. Be so famous, people who don't even have televisions would know your face. Are you willing to bet all of that on one kiss?
I'm willing to bet your happiness and mine on it.
I inhaled, thinking. Okay.
Yes?
Yes. Once the surprise wore off, Gunnar placed his hand on my waist. He lowered his face to mine, stopping momentarily to laugh.
This is a bit surreal.
I'm waiting, sir. He smiled just before our lips touched. There were plenty of good things about the kiss. His mouth wasn't rigid, and he didn't try to stick his tongue down my throat. He also smelled pretty good, though not like cinnamon or flowers or anything recognizable. Overall, I would say not bad. But then, the fact that I could make that assessment as it was going on... Gunnar pulled away, pressed his lips together, and considered. No, right? He shook his head.
I don't think so. Not that it was bad.
It just wasn't that good.
Exactly.
His stance shifted in relief.
Thank you so much for this experience, but I think it's time for me to head home.
I smiled. You sure? You're welcome to stay for the report. Go home in the morning?
Nah.
He smiled bashfully.
I think if I stayed, I'd try to talk myself back into it. You might be the most beautiful girl I'll ever meet, but I don't think you're the girl for me. I'd hate to find a reason why you could be when I've been trying to tell myself for a while that it was unlikely.
I held out my hand. I respect that. Best of luck to you, sir. Gunnar shook my hand.
And to you, Your Highness.
As Gunnar made his way to the stairwell, I saw a butler escorting Hale toward Mom's room. I waved him over, though his eyes were on my dismissed suitor as they passed.
What was Gunnar doing up here?
He asked. Making a choice. Come with me. I need your hands. Chapter 9. I came out of Mom's closet wearing our top pick, pressing it to my chest to save my modesty. Thank you for doing this, I said as Hale went to work, pulling at seams and pinning them in place.
Are you kidding? I'm helping dress my future queen right now. I'm over the moon.
He pulled some more, watching the way the fabric reacted in the mirror.
Of course, it's not the same as building you a gown from scratch, but this will be an impressive addition to my resume.
I chuckled. I just feel bad you have to give up your afternoon for this.
Well, it gets kind of boring in the men's parlor. I'm sure if I ask Kyle, he'll come and sit with me while I work. Or Ian, maybe.
Ian? I said, shocked. It's hard to imagine him willingly joining anyone anywhere. Hale smiled.
Yeah, I think he's finally getting used to us. He talks to me sometimes, and to Eric. Probably because he's not competition.
That makes sense. Ian seems like the not-here-to-make-friends type, but I don't think anyone could go through this without getting close to someone. It's too hard. As difficult as it is for me, I know it's just as bad for you all.
We definitely get the better end of the deal, though,
he said, winking at my reflection. I tilted my head. I don't know about that. The more I think about it, the sadder I get about having to send all but one of you away. I'll miss having you here.
Have you considered a harem?
He said, deadpan. I bent over in laughter and was rewarded with a pin stabbing my waist.
Ow! Sorry, I shouldn't joke when there are needles around.
He walked in front of me and I held still, watching his eyes, recognizing the analytical gaze, knowing I did the same thing myself to designs and proposals and sometimes even to people.
I think we need to streamline this a little. Are you sure this is absolutely okay with the Queen? Because some of these cuts I can't undo.
Don't worry. You have full permission to tweak in any way you deem necessary.
That makes me feel so important.
Well, you are. You're helping me look like a leader tonight. It takes 1,000 little things to make this role work, so I owe you one. Or two. At least two.
You all right?
I looked up, not realizing how somber I'd gotten. Yes, it's just a lot to deal with sometimes. I'm trying to hold it together, that's all. Hale pulled a pin from the pile the maid had left us and held it up for me.
Use this next time you feel like things are falling apart. It'll help, I promise.
Slowly I took it, spinning it between my finger and thumb, and at least for a moment, I believed it was true. Henry was right on time, rushing into the parlor as if he'd been dying to run down for the last 15 minutes. He bypassed ceremony as he held my hands and kissed my cheek, making me laugh.
Hello, today?
I smiled. Hello, Henry. Over Henry's shoulder, Eric bowed and I gave him a nod. I took Henry's arm and led him to the table, laid with two settings fairly close together, and a third, slightly distanced.
Here,
Henry said, pulling out my chair. Once I was seated, he eagerly ran around the table to sit across from me. And the conversation drew to an abrupt halt. I pulled the cover off my plate so they would know they could do the same, and after a few silent bites, I worked to bridge the gap. How's your family? I asked. And your sister?
Mitin on Annika?
He said, turning to Eric for confirmation. He nodded and Henry returned to me, delighted.
Good. She very good. We miss.
I gave him a sad look and nodded. I understand completely. You have no idea how much I wish Aaron was here. He kept his expression calm but leaned over to Eric, who muttered a translation of my answer as quickly as he could.
Your mom is good,
Henry said, trying so hard. Yes, thank goodness. Heading back to her room right now and recovering nicely. Once again, Eric came to our rescue. We went back and forth in the same way for a few more minutes, and even with all the effort he'd been putting into learning English, Henry was as lost as I was. I hated this. It was too impersonal. It was one thing to need a translator for a visiting dignitary, but for someone who was in my home daily, it felt like too much. Even if Henry's time in the palace was short-lived, I really wanted to be able to speak with him, just him, at least from time to time. Eric, how does Henry do with the other elite? Do they all speak through you? He sat taller, taking this in.
Mostly. Hale and Kyle have picked up a few words.
And the others? He pursed his lips, looking guilty as if he was worried he'd sully the reputation of the others.
Gunnar has been marginally interested, as is Fox, but they don't appear to want to take on the challenge. It's a lot of work. And Ian will speak with me, but doesn't really try to speak with Henry.
I let out a long sigh, several thoughts flitting through my head. Would you be up to giving us all a little Finnish lesson tomorrow morning? Eric raised his eyebrows.
Really?
Absolutely. It seems unfair that Henry has to do all the work. As I said his name, Henry's eyes darted over to me. He was certainly following our conversation in his own way, but I was excited for him to discover exactly where this was going. Eric spoke swiftly in Finnish, and Henry's eyes lit up.
I speak too. I speaking?
He asked, as if this was going to be a party instead of a lesson.
Of course, I said, and Henry sat there completely beside himself, the gears already turning in his head.
I think you just made his day, Eric commented.
I'm upset I didn't think of it sooner. It will make things easier on everyone.
I hope so. But I'm still going to focus on the English lessons. I'm hoping to avoid any more appearances on the report.
I made a face. It wasn't that bad.
It was awful.
After shaking his head, he pointed his fork at me.
My mom will not stop talking about it. You look so good. Why didn't you smile more? I swear it's maddening.
You're blaming me, I asked, feigning indignation.
Forever, forever, I am blaming you. I don't like being on camera.
He shuddered. I was glad he didn't actually seem angry, though. I could sense how serious he was about it. I laughed, and he looked down bashfully at his plate as he smiled. It was then I realized Henry was stuck watching me chat with his translator while I was supposed to be on a date with him.
You know, Henry, maybe we could do a full Swedish immersion experience, and you could teach everyone to make that soup you were talking about.
Eric translated, and once again, Henry was jubilant.
Kalakaito,
he exclaimed. There were things I was curious about with Henry. I wanted to know more about his family, particularly his sister. And I wanted to know if he was at peace with the idea of living here and working beside me, or if it worried him that we would have moments like the parade all over again, and he'd be stuck trying to protect me from angry masses for the rest of his life. I wanted to ask him about that kiss in the kitchen, if he'd thought about it much or dismissed it as a lapse of judgment on one or both our parts. But until I could ask him those things without having to ask Eric, too, there was no way I'd be able to. Chapter 10. The dress was red. Mom hadn't worn it in years, which was one of the reasons I chose it. Hale trimmed the long lace sleeves up to my elbows and pulled a few of the layers from beneath the gown so it wasn't quite as full. He was right about some of this being irreversible, but he'd handled it all so tastefully that even if Mom eventually wanted it back, she'd probably be thrilled with the alterations. Eloise helped me do my hair, and it looked so smart, with braids leading back to a modest bun. I chose a tiara with rubies in it, and I looked like I was on fire. It was beautiful, really. I knew that, and I was thankful for all the hands that had gone into making me look like someone who could be trusted with the decisions that had to be made on behalf of the country. It just felt old. Older than I truly was, though, maybe closer to the age I should behave. Sighing, I came to terms with the dress. This was who I had to be for now. I was tugging at my seams in the studio when Josie came up to talk to me.
That dress is amazing, she praised, unable to keep her fingers off the layers of satin.
I kept straightening.
It's my mother's. I'm sorry about all that, by the way, she said quietly. Don't think I've told you yet.
I swallowed. Thank you, Josie. That means a lot.
You know,
Since everything's been so serious, it might be a good idea to have a party.
I huffed out an almost laugh. I'm a little busy for that. Maybe once things settle down.
I could plan it. Just let me talk to a few maids and we could pull something together in a week.
I turned from the mirror. Like I said, maybe one day, but not now. I moved away, trying to focus. She trailed me across the room, insistent.
But why? Shouldn't you be celebrating? I mean, you're practically the queen, so...
I spun on her, enraged.
But I am not the queen. That title belongs to my mother, who nearly died. That you so casually brush over that fact makes the condolences you just gave me meaningless. What don't you get, Josie? Do you think this job is nothing but dresses and galas?
She stood there stunned. I watched her eyes dart around the room, checking to see if anyone was watching our interaction. I didn't want to humiliate her. In a way, I understood her. There might have been a time when nothing brought me more joy than a reason to start a guest list. A time when I thought this role was nothing more than dresses and galas myself. I sighed. I'm not trying to insult you, but it would be inappropriate to throw a party when my mother is still recuperating. Please, what I need from you tonight is some level of understanding, which I realize may be too much, considering our history. Still, for my sanity, I beg you, just try to consider what it's like to be in my shoes. She sulked. That's all I've ever wanted. Of course, that only matters to you when it's convenient. I wanted to rip her head off. What part about my life right now did she think was convenient? But I had a broadcast to think about.
Excuse me,
I called to a passing maid.
Please escort Miss Josie to her room. Her attitude tonight is unsettling and I need to concentrate.
Yes, Your Highness.
The maid turned cheerfully to Josie, not worried about our personal issues and ready to do her job. Josie huffed.
I hate you.
I pointed to the door.
Yes, and you can do that from your room just as well as from here.
Without waiting to see if she obeyed, I made my way to my seat. I'd never seen it set up this way. The elite on one side and a single chair on the other. As I was staring at the sad, lonely seat, Kyle sidled up to me.
What was that with Josie?
I smiled and batted my eyes.
Nothing, sweetheart. Just making me seriously doubt how much I want her as an in-law.
Still too soon?
I laughed.
No, we had a disagreement. And I feel kind of bad because I understand her. I just wish she could understand me.
That might be hard for Josie. She's only aware of herself. Also, have you seen Gunnar?
I squinted. He left this afternoon. Didn't he say goodbye? Kyle shook his head. I walked over to the other boys, who all sat up straighter as I approached.
Did Gunnar say goodbye to any of you?
The others shook their heads in confusion as Fox cleared his throat.
He stopped by to see me. Gunnar's a bit sentimental, and he didn't have it in him to go through a long farewell. He just said this wasn't right for him and that he had your approval to go.
He did. We parted on very good terms. Fox nodded.
I think he thought he'd lose his resolve if he stuck around. He asked me to pass on to everyone how much he would miss you.
He smiled.
Really nice guy.
He was, but take his words to heart. I pleaded, looking at each of their faces. This is about your futures as well. Don't stay for something that you might not be able to handle. Kyle nodded, looking suddenly pensive. Hale gave me a bright smile. Ian was impassive as ever, and Henry was taking in Eric's translation, looking confused. Certainly I'd spend the rest of my evening overanalyzing their expressions, but for now, we had a show to put on.
Hale,
I whispered, pointing to the gown.
Thank you.
beautiful,
he mouthed. I knew he meant it, and I tried to hold myself taller. I wanted to do this dress justice tonight. The cameras went on, and I greeted the country as honestly as I could. Let me begin with the news you're most eager to hear. My mother is doing well. As I speak, she is healing in her room with my father by her side. I tried to stop focusing on how I was standing or what I should do with my hands. Instead, I thought of my parents, no doubt watching this in pajamas with doctor-approved snacks by their sides. And when I pictured that, I smiled. We all know that their love story may be the truest one ever told, though it has been no small task to step into my father's role. My brother Aaron, now the Prince Consort of France, is also a testament to the power of the deepest love. From what I understand, he is settling into his new position very well and is already very happy to be a husband. My smile crept through again. None of this surprises me. His devotion to Princess Camille over both time and distance has been constant and strong, and I can only imagine his happiness at getting to be beside her every moment. As for the country at large, I glanced at my notes, though I hated to do it. Some of the disquiet we've been experiencing has diminished over the last few weeks. In one way, that was absolutely true, but as far as disquiet related to me, my nose ought to be growing as I spoke. Taking into account how much work my father has put into the cause of peace abroad, the thought that we could finally be achieving a greater peace at home brings me extraordinary joy. I hit on everything I was supposed to. The budget proposal, the upcoming start to the drilling project, and the change in the advisory board, which made a few people in the room squirm. And when it was all done, I searched the crowd for a few important faces. Lady Bryce gave me a big nod, as did General Ledger. I saw Grandma fidgeting, impatient with the lengthy announcements, and likely only holding on so she could hear the boys speak. And just off the stage, Eric smiled at me, pleased.
Your Highness, Gavril bowed as he spoke. May I say, considering the circumstances under which you've been thrust into this role, you are doing a fantastic job.
Thank you, sir. I didn't know how genuine that statement was, but maybe him saying it would make other people think it.
One has to wonder, if you've been working at such a pace, have you made any time for this lot over here?
He asked, nodding his head toward the elite. A little.
Really? Anything you can share with us?
He wiggled his eyebrows, and I was reminded again of the ways in which his on-camera personality differed from his off-camera one. Entertainment was his job, and he was great at it.
Yes, but for fun, I won't be using names.
Not using names?
For instance, one member of the elite has left us today,
I said, though I knew this was a throwaway that'd be unraveled in seconds. I would like to say of our departed suitor that he left in good spirits and as a friend.
Ah, I see,
Gavril said.
I like this. Give us some more.
Well, today one of my suitors gave me a gift made from a very precious metal.
Oh, my.
Gavril surveyed my hands, looking as everyone would for rings. I held them up for the world to see.
No, not gold. It was steel. He gave me a sewing pin. But I promise it was very special.
Chuckles arose from our audience and from the elite, and I hoped that this was as charming on camera as it was in my head.
Please tell me you have at least one more,
Gavril pleaded.
One more, I allowed. Earlier this week, one of the elite told me he definitely wasn't in love with me, and I told him I felt the same way.
Gavril was wide-eyed.
Is this the same young man who happened to leave us?
No, and that's the crazy part. We're not in love, and yet we have no desire to be separated. So there you go. I gave a playful shrug and smiled as I listened to the sighs and laughter around the room.
While I'm sure a fair share of our country will be up late tonight trying to guess who you're talking about, it would be nice to have something a bit more solid.
You might have to talk to the boys about that.
Then I think we shall do just that. May I go and quiz these handsome young men?
By all means, I replied with a smile, happy to back out of the spotlight for one beautiful moment.
All right, let's start down here. Sir Fox, how are you?
Very good, sir. Thank you.
He sat up a little straighter and smiled brightly.
The people understand that the princess has been under a lot of stress, and her days are packed full, so the one-on-one time has been limited,
Gavril said graciously.
Yeah, it was impressive to see how hard she was working before, so seeing her take on even more these last few days, it's inspiring.
I tipped my head, feeling a little warm inside. Inspiring? That was such a kind thought. Gavril nodded in agreement.
Considering all that, could you tell us something from your time with the princess that has stood out against all the rest?
Instantly a smile came to Fox's face.
I suppose the most significant moment of our relationship would be after the fight, when Burke went home. She came and spoke to me and was so honest about what she hoped for. She listened to me, too. I think that's the side of her that few people have the privilege of seeing. It's not as if she can go door to door giving everyone an hour of her time. But when she's with you, she's all there. She's really hearing you.
I remembered that night with Fox warmly, but I didn't realize how much it had meant to him. He'd treasured that moment. Kyle raised his hand.
I'd have to agree with that. Everyone knows that Eid, the princess and I really only began our friendship recently. And in that time, I've felt a lot of my worries and aspirations have been heard.
Like what?
Gavril prodded. He shrugged.
I mean, it's nothing exciting, but I do have a passion for architecture. And the princess actually sat down and looked at my sketches.
He raised a finger as if he suddenly remembered something.
Granted, we'd had some wine, and I'm sure she was very bored, but still.
Everyone chuckled, and I smiled at Kyle. He made being on camera look so easy, always coming up with wonderful things to say. It made me feel surer I'd made the right call telling him how I felt. Carrying the momentum, Gavril bypassed Henry and headed straight to Ian. I hated that Henry was being excluded, but it looked like Gavril had a plan.
Sir Ian, you are maybe the quietest one of the bunch. Do you have anything to add?
His expression was as cool as ever.
I am a man of few words, he agreed. But I will say that the princess is incredibly thoughtful. Though there are only 5 of us left, none of the eliminations were made flippantly. Just by getting to know these other gentlemen, I can see the effort the princess has put into making the best possible choice for herself and for her people. What the cameras couldn't capture was the mood in the men's parlor when she had to make her most recent elimination. There wasn't a drop of animosity in the air. She's been so generous with us that it was impossible to be upset. All the other suitors left satisfied.
Gavril nodded.
So, how do you think your chances are? You've made it to the top 5.
Ian, as always, was nothing but smooth.
I am at Her Highness's disposal. She is the best woman any of us could possibly attain, and as such has incredible standards. It's not about my assessment of my odds, it's about her preference. For that, we will all wait and see.
I'd never heard Ian speak so much at once, but I found myself feeling instantly indebted to him. Though we had an understanding in our relationship, and it was admittedly unromantic, he still saw so much good in me. That, or he was an incredible actor.
Very interesting. What about you, Sir Hale?
As I recall, you had the first date with the princess. How are you feeling right now?
I feel lucky, he said warmly. I've grown up seeing her in parades and watching her on television and seeing her face in magazines.
He pointed across the room at me.
She's so pretty, it's intimidating. And she has this look like maybe she could burn you with her eyes if she felt like it.
Part of that stung, but there was something so terribly honest about it that I couldn't not smile.
But I got to have dinner with her once and made her laugh so hard she spit her drink out.
Hail! He shrugged.
Someone would find out someday. You might as well share.
I covered my face with my hands, wondering what Mom and Dad would think of all this.
My point is, everything we've said about her is true. She's tough. She's a leader, and yes, I think if she wanted to shoot fire from her eyes, she could do it.
The room chuckled.
But she's also a great listener, and is invested and knows how to laugh. Like, really laugh. I'm not sure everyone will get to see that, so I feel lucky that I did.
The entire segment was such a glorious tribute to my finer qualities that I almost wondered if the boys had been coached. And if they had, then I owed something huge to whoever thought of it. As the cameras went down, I walked over to Gavril. Thank you. You were outstanding tonight.
I have always been on your side, and I always will be.
He winked at me and went on his way. I watched as the audience filtered out, and I stood there a moment feeling proud. I'd gotten through it, almost entirely on my own. The elite were fantastic, kinder than I could have guessed or hoped. Mom and Dad were going to be so pleased.
Well done. Kyle wrapped an arm around me. Your first solo report is in the books.
I seriously thought tonight might be a disaster, but look, I said, leaping away and holding out my arms. I'm still in one piece. Hale came over and chuckled.
Did you think people would stream in through the doors and tear you to bits?
You never know. Fox laughed and Ian stood back, still smiling. I was so grateful. If I'd known how to articulate it, I'd have unabashedly gushed about how great they'd been tonight.
Dinner?
Fox asked, and the boys all nodded. I heard Henry saying one word over and over again, excitedly, which I assumed meant he was thrilled to be getting food. We all formed a little group and walked to the dining hall together. Chapter 11. I felt so content as we walked up the stairs and down the hallways, a sense of familiarity and peace surrounding me that I suspected had a lot to do with me feeling so comfortable with my company. It lasted right up until the moment we walked through the dining hall doors. Mom and Dad were still upstairs, and Grandma had retreated to her room. Austin wasn't feeling well this evening, so Caden was keeping him company, and my twin was still an ocean away from me and then some. One look at the empty head table and I wanted to go and hide away myself.
Your Highness?
Eric asked, and I turned to find myself inches away from his concerned eyes. There was something calming about them, a detail I remembered from after the fight in the kitchen. I'd looked into them then and felt like I had seen right through to his soul. Even now, with so many people around, just seeing his crystal-clear blue eyes search mine swept away my sadness.
Are you all right?
He said, and I could tell from his tone that he'd already asked me once and I'd missed it. Yes. Could you please go grab those chairs and put them on the other side of the head table? You too, Ian. They walked off to follow my request. Hale, Fox, can you get the place settings? I moved, too, picking up silverware and glasses and making my way to the head table. Before anyone else could choose a place, I took Dad's chair for myself. Kyle was on one side and Hale was on the other. Fox, Henry, Eric, and Ian sat across from us, and suddenly that long, imposing table felt like an intimate dinner party. Just me and my boys. The butlers were a little disorganized as they served, unprepared for the impromptu rearrangement, but making it to everyone in good time. And, taking a cue from our date, Henry dug in first and the others followed. "So I hope you're all ready for tomorrow," I announced. "Eric and Henry are giving us Finnish lessons in the morning."
"Really?"
Kyle asked excitedly. Eric blushed a little and nodded.
"What's in the lesson plans?"
Fox asked. Eric raised his eyes to the ceiling as if he was still deciding.
"Henry and I were talking, and I think we'll bypass the usual first day things, like the alphabet. What would be most helpful in this situation is basic conversational skills. So telling time and other requests will be at the top of the agenda."
"Neat,"
Hale commented.
"I've been wanting to learn more. Great idea, Eric."
He shook his head.
"It was our future queen's idea. The credit belongs to her."
"Hey,"
Kyle said, getting my attention.
"Can we also take a moment to talk about how great you were on the report again? I know you've done announcements and stuff, but managing a whole show on your own is no small feat."
"Also," Fox added, "how awesome is the seating arrangement tonight? For all but one of us, this is the only time we'll ever sit at the head table in the palace. Unforgettable."
"Agreed,"
Ian added. And while Henry didn't add much to the conversation, I could tell he was pleased too. But of course, it would have been more surprising to see him upset. As Eric caught him up on the conversation, he raised his glass.
"For Edlin,"
he said. The others put their drinks in the air and chorused his toast. I found myself blinking back happy tears and unable to say a word. Not even thank you, though I could tell from the looks in their eyes that it was already understood. There were plenty of good things for the country to focus on, but with a mass elimination earlier in the week and Gunner leaving before the report, it looked like I was pushing people away again. At least, that's what the paper said. It was as if they didn't hear a single thing Ian had said about how I'd toiled over that decision. An entire live broadcast was brought to rubble by a handful of headlines. Surprisingly, beneath those stories was Merid's handsome face splashed across the papers next to mine, with commentary on how he'd missed out now that I'd begun my selection process.
"Give me those," Nina insisted, balling up the papers and smushing them into the trash can. "It seems they're reporting little news and plenty of gossip these days."
"Undoubtedly," Lady Bryce agreed. "Focus less on what people say and more on what you can accomplish."
I nodded my head, knowing she was right. She told me things I felt sure my father would if he was in the room, and though it wasn't always easy, I felt compelled to listen. I'm just not sure I can focus on what I'm capable of accomplishing until I get public opinion under control. Anything I propose, even if it is something they might have championed if Mom or Dad had initiated it, will probably be met with opposition. I need to choose a husband, I said decidedly. I feel confident that will help with public opinion, and let's all hope so because they don't like me.
Edlin, that's not—
It's true, I know it is, Lady Bryce. I've experienced it myself. Need I remind you of the parade? She crossed her arms.
Okay, fine. You're not exactly popular.
And I can see how finding a partner might sway that. So, is that what we're focusing on today? At least for the next 5 minutes. I trust my head a little more than my heart, so help me. Talk it out.
Nina shrugged. Who's up first? Kyle. The entire palace is pulling for him. He's so cute and smart and—
Oh my goodness, if you don't want him, send him my way. Don't you have a boyfriend? She sighed.
Ah, I hate it when you're right.
I laughed. I'd be lying if I said I didn't feel a connection with him. I even told him as much. But I keep pausing on him,
I'm not sure why, but I'm not ready to say he's my first choice.
Okay,
Lady Bryce replied.
Who else?
Hale. He's got a great attitude, and has vowed to prove himself to me every day. He's yet to fail, and he's easy to be around. That's one of the reasons I like Fox, too.
Fox is more attractive than Hale, Nina said. Not to be shallow, but those things matter in public opinion.
I understand that, but beauty is subjective. You know how sometimes what makes a person attractive is the way they make you laugh, or how it seems like they can read your mind? I want to think about that, too.
Nina smiled. So you'd pick Hale over Fox, then?
I shook my head. That's not what I meant exactly. I'm only trying to say that looks aren't everything. We need to focus on other qualities.
Like?
Lady Bryce encouraged.
Like how Henry is endlessly optimistic. No matter the circumstance, he is a beacon of joy. And I don't doubt his affection for me in the slightest.
Nina rolled her eyes.
That's fine, but he can't speak English. There's no way you two have ever had a conversation that did more than skim the surface.
That's true, but he's very sweet and would be good to me. Eric said it was possible for Henry to learn, but it might take a while. And he's been up until midnight studying since he became an elite. And for my part, I'm on my way to a finished lesson right now. We can work on this from both ends, and Eric could stay on for as long as it took for us to adjust.
Lady Bryce shook her head.
That's rather unfair to Eric. He has a family, a job. He didn't sign up to possibly be stuck at the palace for the next 5 years. What if he wants to find a partner of his own?
I wanted to shoot back that she was wrong. But I couldn't. Eric didn't know how long the selection would last when he agreed to come. But he certainly didn't go into this thinking he'd live at the palace until his charge was fluent in English. And it would be unkind to ask him to do just that.
He'd stay, I know it, was all I said.
There was a silence after that, like Lady Bryce knew I was in the wrong and was debating calling me on it. Instead, she sighed.
Who's left? Ian?
She asked.
Ian's a little trickier, but trust me, he's important.
Nina squinted.
So then, they're all front runners.
I sighed. I guess so. I'm not sure if that means I chose well or chose poorly.
Lady Bryce laughed. You chose well. Really, I may not understand Ian's appeal or how you'd make things work with Henry, but they all have their merits. I think what we need to do at this point is step up their training, really start grooming them for the throne. That will help elevate some of them, I'm sure.
Grooming? That sounds creepy.
I don't mean it like that. I'm simply saying...
Lady Bryce's next words were lost, because without any warning, Grandma flung the door open.
You really need to ask permission first,
a guard warned her in a hushed tone. She kept walking toward me.
Well, my girl, it's time for me to head out.
So soon? I asked, embracing her.
I can never stay too long. Your mother is recovering from a heart attack, and she still has the audacity to order me around. I know she's the queen,
she conceded, raising her hands in the air in surrender.
But I'm her mother, and that trumps queen any day.
I laughed. I'll remember that for down the road.
You do that, she said, rubbing my cheek. And if you don't mind, get yourself a husband as soon as you can. I'm not getting any younger, and I'd like to see at least one great-grandchild before I'm dead.
She stared at my stomach and shook her finger.
Don't let me down.
Okay, Grandma. We have to get back to work here, so you head on home and make sure to call when you get there.
Will do, honey, will do.
I stood in silence, basking in the insanity that was my grandmother. Nina leaned over.
Now, which of your top five do you think would be the most eager baby maker? Should we put that on a checklist?
Even my most violent glare did nothing to diminish her giddiness. Don't forget I can call in a firing squad at any moment if I like.
You can call that firing squad whenever you want, but I've got Grandma on my side, so I've got nothing to worry about.
I slumped, letting the silliness of it all settle in. Sadly, Nina, I think you're right.
Don't feel too bad. She means well at the heart of it all.
I'll try and remember that. So, are we okay for now? I need to go learn some Finnish.
Sorry, 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 I said, bursting into the library.
The boys cheered at my entrance, and I scurried over to an open seat at a table with Henry, Hale, and Ian.
Duty called.
Eric chuckled, placing a small packet of papers in front of me.
You're excused. Don't worry. We haven't gone too far. Look over the first page, and Henry will help you with pronunciations while I check how everyone else is doing. Then we'll move on.
Okay.
I picked up the paper, a copy made of Eric's handwritten notes with hand-drawn pictures in the margin, and smiled. First task of the day was learning to count to 12, so we could tell time. Staring at this simple lesson made me instantly embarrassed. All I could think of was that it seemed there weren't enough vowels in the words, and the ones that bothered to show up were all in the wrong places.
All right, I said, looking at the first word.
Y-K-S-I.
Yuxi?
Henry giggled and shook his head.
Is said Yuxi.
Yuxi?
Yes, go, go,
he encouraged, and though I couldn't be anything close to perfect, it was still nice having my own personal cheerleader.
Is said Kaksi.
Kaksi. Kaksi.
Good, good. Now is Kolme.
Kulme, I tried.
He said, still trying to be positive.
Kolme.
I tried again, but I could see I was getting it wrong. I was being foiled by the number 3. Ever the gentleman, he leaned in, preparing to take as much time as I needed.
He said, oh, kolme.
Oh,
oh, I tried. He lifted his hand and gently put his fingers on my cheeks, trying to change the shape of my mouth, and it tickled. I broke into a smile, unable to even make the sound he was going for in the first place. But he held my face all the same. After a moment, the humor left his eyes and I recognized the look in them. I'd seen it before in the kitchen, when he'd turned his shirt into an apron for me. It was such a captivating stare, I completely forgot there were other people in the room. Until Eric dropped a book on the other desk.
Excellent,
he said, and I pulled away from Henry as quickly as I could, praying that no one had noticed what had nearly just happened.
It looks like you're all doing well with the numbers, so we're going to start using them in sentences. If you'll look up at the board here, I've got a written example. But as I'm sure you've already guessed, the pronunciation is a bit tricky.
The boys laughed, seeming to have struggled with the numbers as much as I had, and also seeming to have been too engrossed to have noted my almost kiss. I focused my gaze on the board, trying to take in the phonetics of the words in front of me, instead of focusing on how close Henry was sitting. Chapter 12. The first free moment I had that day was lunch, and I knew I needed to use the time to focus on damage control. While everyone headed off to the dining room after our Finnish lesson, I went back to my office and pulled Merritt's card from my desk drawer. It was clearly made from expensive paper. I wondered what his family was doing now to afford that. They must have done well for themselves wherever their path had taken them. I dialed the number, kind of hoping he wouldn't pick up.
Hello?
Yes, Merid.
Edlin? Is that you?
Yes, I fidgeted, straightening out my clothes even though he couldn't see me. Is this an okay time?
Absolutely. How can I help you, Your Highness?
I just wanted to say, I saw some speculation about our relationship in the press the other day.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry about that. You know how they can take a thing out of context.
I do, I nearly exclaimed. And really, I wanted to apologize to you. I know what an upheaval it can be when someone's life is caught up in mine, and I'm sorry you've been going through that.
Let 'em talk, he replied with a laugh. Really, no apology necessary. But while I've got you, I wanted to run an idea past you.
Sure.
I know you've been worried about the post-caste violence, and I thought it might be good for you to have something like a town hall session.
What do you mean?
You could choose a handful of people from various backgrounds to come to the palace and sit down with you personally. It would be a unique opportunity to hear from your people. And if you invited the press, it might also be a rather spectacular opportunity to show how well the palace listens to its people.
I was stunned. Actually, that's a wonderful idea.
If you want, I can take care of most of the arrangements for you. I have a few links with some families that used to be eights, as well as some that have had a hard time letting go of their two status. Maybe we could plan on inviting a dozen or so people, so you wouldn't be overwhelmed.
Merid, that sounds perfect. I'm going to have my lady-in-waiting call you. Her name is Nina Hellensway, and she's as organized as you seem to be. She knows my schedule and would be the best person to talk to about a time and date.
Excellent. I'll wait to hear from her.
There was a long silence, and I wasn't quite sure how to break away. Thank you, I tried. Now, more than ever, I really need to prove how much I care about my people. I want them to know that in a few years, I'll be as able to lead them as my father.
How anyone could doubt that is a mystery to me.
I smiled, thrilled to have added another ally to my arsenal. Sorry to rush off, but I must be going.
Not at all. We'll talk again soon.
Of course. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
I hung up the phone and sighed in relief. That wasn't as awkward as I'd been fearing it would be. Merritt's words rang in my ears. Let 'em talk. I knew they always would. Hopefully soon, they'd have something positive to say. Chapter 13.
Wait, which way do these guys move again?
Hale asked, before reaching over and picking up two pedophores and setting them on his plate. Bishops move diagonally. I wouldn't do that if I was you, but it's your funeral. He laughed.
Okay, what about the little castle ones?
Straight lines, either side to side or back and forth. He moved his rook, taking another one of my pawns.
Honestly, I never would have pegged you for a chess girl.
I'm not really. Aaron used to be obsessed, and he forced me to play with him every single day for months. But then he got serious about Camille, and all his chess time turned into letter-writing time. I moved my bishop and took his knight.
Ah, I didn't even see that,
he lamented between bites.
I've been wanting to ask you about Aaron, but I wasn't sure if you were up for it.
I shrugged, prepared to dismiss the invitation, but instead I reminded myself that if I was going to have a shot at happiness at all, I had to let someone past my walls. Sighing, I told the truth. I miss him. It's like I grew up with a built-in best friend, and now he's gone.
I have other people I'm close to, like my lady-in-waiting, Nina. I don't think I realized how much I was relying on her until Aaron was gone and I could see it. But it makes me afraid. What if I get to the point I did with Aaron, where she's the person I go to with everything and then something happens and she leaves? Hale nodded as he listened, and I could see he was trying to suppress a smile. This isn't funny, I complained, chucking one of his lost palms at him. He laughed out loud, dodging the throw.
No, I'm not smiling because of that. It's just... the last time we talked like this, you ran. You're not wearing sneakers under that gown, are you?
Not at all. They wouldn't go together, I teased. No, really. I should have trusted you then, and I do trust you now. Sorry if I'm slow. Opening up to people is not a skill of mine.
No rush. I'm a pretty patient person.
I couldn't take the eye contact anymore, so I focused on the board, watching his hands hover above the grid.
As for how you feel about Nina,
Hale went on.
Even if she did have to leave, that wouldn't make her less of a friend any more than it makes Aaron less of your brother. You might have to work harder to keep in touch, but if you love them as much as you say, it'll be worth it.
I know that's true, I admitted. It's already pretty difficult for me to make friends, seeing as I don't get out much. So I kind of need to keep the ones I have. Hale chuckled and I missed what he did on the board.
Well, I just want to go on record and say that even if you don't choose me, you have my friendship for life. And I'll be on a plane to Angeles in a heartbeat if you ever need me.
I smiled. Something every day. He nodded.
Every day.
I really needed to hear that. Thank you. I sat up taller and began to plan my next move. What about you? Who's your best friend?
Actually, I was interrogated over this a few weeks ago, just after Burke left. My best friend is a girl, and they thought I was writing to my girlfriend back home. Let me tell you, it was humiliating to ask her to get on the phone with a guard and explain that we'd never, ever been romantically involved.
I bit my lip, glad he could see the humor in it. I'm really sorry.
It's fine. Carrie got a kick out of it, actually.
Well, I'm happy she took it in stride. I cleared my throat. But now I have to ask, have you really never had a crush on her?
No.
He almost shuddered.
Carrie's like a sister to me. The thought of kissing her just feels wrong.
I put my hands up in front of me, startled by how offended he was. Okay, I don't have to worry about Carrie. Got it.
Sorry.
The disgust in his face shifted to a shy smile.
It's just that I've been asked that a million times. Other friends, our parents. It's like everyone has always wanted us to be together, and I don't feel anything like that for her.
I get that. Sometimes it seems like everyone wants me to pick Kyle just because we grew up together. Like that alone is enough to guarantee you'll fall in love.
Well, the difference there is that you actually have feelings for Kyle. Anyone watching could tell.
He fiddled with a discarded pawn. I looked at my lap. I shouldn't have brought that up, I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. I think the only way to stay sane through all this is to remember that you're the one leading this, and you're the one who decides where we stand. The only thing any of us can do is be ourselves.
Where do you think you stand exactly? He gave me a small smile.
I don't know. Somewhere in the middle?
I shook my head. You're doing better than that.
Yeah?
Yeah. His smile faded a little.
That's kind of amazing, but also scary. There's a lot of responsibility that comes with winning this.
I nodded. Tons.
I guess I never really stopped to think about that. But with you really being in charge these days, it's a little overwhelming.
I stared at him, feeling certain I had to be misunderstanding something. You're not trying to back out, are you?
No,
he said, continuing to roll the pawn in his hand.
I'm just coming face to face with how big this is. I'm sure your mom had moments like this, too.
He was uncharacteristically sharp, and this seemed to run deeper than his frustration about Carrie. As I continued, trying to keep my tone even, he avoided my eyes. Did I miss something? You've always been so enthusiastic, to the point that I've wondered about your sanity. What's with the sudden cold feet?
I didn't say I was having cold feet,
he countered.
I was simply voicing a concern. You're constantly voicing your concerns. How is this any different?
There was plenty of truth to that, but I had clearly hit a nerve. And after how hard I'd worked to be open with Hale, I didn't understand why he would clam up on me. While I didn't think he was the type to test me simply for the sake of it, I wondered if maybe he was trying to gauge my patience. I clenched and unclenched my hands underneath the table, reminding myself that I trusted Hale. Perhaps it's better if we change the subject, I suggested.
Agreed.
But the only thing that followed was silence. Chapter 14. The parlor was prepared for our coming guests. Two rows of chairs were set up stadium style, reminding me of how the selected used to sit for the report. We had food and drinks around the room, a security checkpoint by the door, and cameras circulating. Behind the production staff, the elite sat against the wall, and they all seemed to be excited to find a part of my job they could observe. I was happy to see that Kyle and Eric, though surely his actions were more for Henry's benefit, had both brought notepads. They'd come to work.
You look lovely,
Merritt assured me, probably noting that I was pulling at my collar. I was trying to look businesslike without making things too formal.
And you succeeded. You just need to calm down. They're not here to attack you. They're here to talk to you. The only thing you have to do is listen.
I nodded. Listen. I can do that. I took a deep breath. We'd never done anything like this before, and I was equal parts giddy and horrified. How did you find these people? Friends of yours?
Not exactly. A few have called into radio shows I've done before, and others were suggested by acquaintances. It's a good mix of social and economic statuses, which should create some well-rounded discussion.
I took this in. That's all this was. A discussion. I would see the faces of people who actually lived in our country, hear their voices. It wasn't a massive crowd, it was a handful.
We're going to make it through this, all right?
He said reassuringly. All right. And I reminded myself that this was a good thing as our guests began trickling into the room. I walked over to shake hands with a woman who looked like she'd taken more time on her hair than I had, and her husband who, while handsome, could have knocked someone out with the amount of cologne he'd put on.
Your Highness, the woman greeted, dropping into a curtsy.
My name is Sharon Spinner, and this is my husband, Don.
He bowed.
We're so pleased to be here. It's so nice the palace is taking time to hear from its people.
I nodded. It's long overdue. Please help yourself to some refreshments and make yourself comfortable. The producers might stop to interview you as people settle in, but you're under no obligation to speak to them if you don't want to. Sharon touched the corners of her lips, making sure her makeup was as pristine as possible.
No, we don't mind at all. Come on, honey.
I could barely contain my eye roll. The spinners seemed a little too eager to be on camera. Behind the spinners were the Barneses and the Poulters. There was a girl on her own, Bree Marksman, and two younger men, Joel and Blake, who had met in the foyer and were already talking like friends. Finally, a younger couple who introduced themselves as the Shells walked in. They looked like they had done their best to scrape together some nice clothes for the occasion and had come up short. "Brenton and Allie," you said. I waved a hand, inviting them to walk beside me.
"Yes, Your Highness. Thank you so much for having us."
Brenton smiled, looking grateful and bashful at once.
"Does this mean that we're going to be able to move now?"
I stopped, turning to face them. Allie swallowed, clearly trying not to get her hopes up. "Move?"
"Yeah. Down in Zuni, we've been trying to move out of our neighborhood for a while."
"It's not very safe," Allie added quietly.
"We've been thinking about starting a family, but they keep changing the prices of the apartments."
"We had friends who moved, and they didn't have any problems," Allie insisted.
"But when we tried to get into the same area, the rent was double what it was for Nick and Ellen."
"The owners said our friends must have misquoted the rate, but, well, I don't want to accuse anyone of anything, but Nick was born a 3, and we both would be 5s.
"We just want to live somewhere safer,"
Brenton added with a shrug.
"Even if you can't fix it, we thought meeting with the princess might help things."
"Your Highness," the producer said.
"I'm sorry to interrupt, but we're starting."
She showed the Shells to their seats and I sat across from everyone, unsure of how to begin. I laughed, trying to break the tension.
"Since we've never done this before, we don't really have an outline to follow. Does anyone have any questions?"
One of the young men, Blake, I remembered, raised his hand, and I watched as cameras changed angles to focus on his face. "Yes, Blake."
"When will the king be back?"
And just like that, I became insignificant.
"I'm not sure. It depends on when my mother is fully recovered."
"But he will be back, right?"
I forced myself to smile.
"If, for some reason, he didn't return, the state would continue as usual. I have always been next in line to rule, and I have the same ideals as my father. He wanted so badly to see the castes brought to an end, and now that they're gone, I would seek to further erase the lines they've left in their wake."
I peeked over at Merritt, who gave me a quick thumbs up.
"But that's the thing,"
Andrew Barnes began.
"The palace has done nothing to help those of us whose parents were 5s and 6s or lower."
"I think we've been at a loss as to what would be most effective. That's part of why you're here today. We want to hear from you."
I crossed my hands on my lap, hoping I looked put together.
"Do monarchs ever really hear their people?" Bree asked. "Have you considered handing the government over to the public? Don't you think there's a chance we might do a better job than you?"
"Well," Sharon cut me off, turning to Bree.
"Sweetie, you can barely dress yourself. How do you think you could possibly run a country?"
"Give me a vote," Bree demanded. "That alone would change plenty."
Mr. Poulter, Jamal, leaned forward.
"You're too young,"
he said, also ganging up on Bree.
"I want to see change myself. I've lived through the castes. I was a 3, and I lost a lot since then. You kids don't know enough about where we've been to even contribute to the conversation."
The other single boy stood up enraged.
"Just because I'm young doesn't mean I don't pay attention, or that I don't know people who've struggled. I want this country to be better for everyone, not just me.
We were less than 5 minutes in, and the entire conversation had turned into a barking contest. It didn't even seem to matter that I was there. Plenty of people mentioned me, of course, but no one actually spoke to me. I supposed trying to get a glimpse at a wide range of lifestyles meant we were going to have conflict, but I wished Merritt had vetted these people better. Then again, maybe he had, and we still ended up with people who didn't care if I was present or not. I'd spent so much time worrying that they'd hate me that I hadn't paused to consider the possibility that I was simply irrelevant in their eyes.
If we could maybe raise our hands, I suggested, trying to regain control.
I can't hear your thoughts if you're all speaking at once.
I demand a vote,
Bree yelled, and the others fell silent. She glared at me.
You people have no idea what our lives are actually like. Look at this room.
She gestured to the expertly coordinated paint and tapestries, the porcelain dishes and sparkling glasses.
How can we trust your judgment when you are this disconnected from your people? You rule over our lives with no understanding of what it means to live the way we do.
She has a point, said Suzette Poulter. You've never spent a day in the dirt or on the run. It's easy to make decisions about other people's lives when you don't have to live them.
I sat there staring at these strangers. I was responsible for them. But how could I be? How could one person make sure each and every soul had every chance they could, everything they needed? It wasn't possible. And yet, stepping down didn't seem like the solution either.
I'm sorry, I have to stop this, Merritt said, coming out of the shadows. The princess is too gracious to remind you of exactly who she is, but as her very dear friend, I cannot allow you to speak to her this way.
He reminded me of some of my tutors, the way they stood over me and made me feel embarrassed, even when I wasn't sure there was a reason I should be.
Princess Edelin may not be your sovereign today, but she is destined for the throne. She has earned it through a long line of tradition and sacrifice. You forget that while you have choice over your profession, location, your very future, hers has been assigned to her at birth, and she has willingly accepted the weight of it for your sake. Shouting at her over her youth is unfair. As we all know, her father had little more experience when he ascended. Princess Edelin has studied tirelessly at his side for years, and has already said she plans to carry out his ambitions. Tell her how to do that.
Bree cocked her head. I already did.
If you're suggesting we suddenly become a democracy, that would cause more havoc in your life than you can imagine,
Merritt insisted.
But if you want to vote, I began. Perhaps we can talk about how to implement that locally. It's much more possible for the leaders closest to you, the ones who actually see your area day to day, to provide what's needed most for you.
Bree didn't smile, but she did relax her tight shoulders.
That would be a start.
Okay, then. I saw Nina ferociously taking notes. Brenton, you mentioned something about housing when you came in. Can you tell me more about that? After 15 minutes, the group came to the decision that housing should never be denied to anyone based on their profession or former caste, and that all prices should be made public so they couldn't be marked up to restrict certain people from applying.
I don't want to sound snobby, Sharon said, but some of us live in areas where we would prefer certain people not to come. You failed,
one of the boys said.
That sounds completely snobby.
I sighed, thinking. First of all, I assume that if you live in a wealthy neighborhood, it would take a considerable amount of money to move there in the first place. And second of all, you're assuming that people with little means would make for horrible neighbors.
What you said about me, Suzette, was right.
She perked up at the sound of her name and smiled over being correct without knowing what it was yet.
I've never lived outside the palace. But, thanks to the selection, young men from many different backgrounds have come into my life. And they've taught me so much. Some of them were working through school or supporting their families or trying just to master English so they can have more opportunities. They might have gone through their lives with much less than I have, but they've enriched my life in ways I can't begin to express.
Sharon, I asked, isn't that worth something? She didn't answer.
At the end of the day, I can't force any of you to treat people the way you should, but it should be on your conscience that whatever laws I pass won't do much unless each of you takes it upon yourself to show kindness to your fellow citizens.
I saw Merritt smile and knew that while I may not have gotten it perfect, I'd taken a big step. It felt like a victory. When the town hall meeting was over, I felt ready to collapse from the tension. Nearly 2 hours of talking felt like a week's worth of work. Thank goodness the elite seemed to understand how drained I was and left with little more than polite bows. There'd be plenty of time to discuss this with them later. For now, I just wanted to flop onto a couch. I groaned at Merritt.
I get the feeling they'll want us to do this again, but I refuse until I have fully recovered from today, which may take years.
He laughed.
You did great. They're the ones who made it difficult. But since this was a first, no one knew how to behave. If you do this again, it will be much better on all sides.
I hope so. I rubbed my hands together. I keep thinking about Bree, how passionate she was.
Passionate?
He rolled his eyes.
That's one word for it.
I'm serious. This mattered so much to her, I lamented, thinking of how she looked close to tears a few times. I've studied political science my whole life. I know about republics and constitutional monarchies and democracies. I wonder if maybe she's right. Maybe we should.
Let me stop you right there. Have you already forgotten how deranged she looked when she saw she wasn't going to get her way? Do you really want the country's choices made by someone like her?
She's one voice out of millions.
Exactly. And I have studied politics just as long as you, and through a much more varied lens. Trust me, it is far better to keep the control right here.
He held my hands in his, smiling so surely that I dismissed my thoughts.
And you are very capable. Don't let a tiny group of people with no idea of how to reasonably voice their opinions undermine your confidence.
I nodded. I was a bit shaken, that's all.
Of course you were. That was a tough crowd. But you could wash it all away with a bottle of wine. I know you have excellent stores here.
We do, I replied with a grin.
Come on, then. Let's celebrate. You just did a wonderful thing for your people. You've more than earned a glass.
Chapter 15.
Well, it wasn't great, I admitted, but it could have been much worse.
Tell your daughter to give herself more credit,
Merritt insisted. Mom and Dad smiled, and I was glad we'd run into them in the hallway. Dad's voice, above all the others, would help me sort out exactly what I'd just said and done.
We try, Merritt, I assure you.
Dad took a sip of his wine before setting it down, pushing it far away and pouring himself a cup of tea just like Mom. The doctor said an occasional drink was fine, but she clearly wasn't interested in risking it, and I wasn't surprised Dad would follow her lead.
How's your mother?
Mom asked. The set of her lips made me feel like she'd been dying to ask the question. Merritt grinned.
She never slows down. She's sad, of course, that she can't do bigger things, but she works diligently to take care of those near us in Columbia. Even a small bit of good is better than none.
Agreed, Mom replied. Would you please tell her I think of her often? She flicked her eyes toward Dad, who remained unreadable, but Merid seemed pleased.
I will, and I can assure you she feels the same.
The conversation paused, and everyone focused on their drinks for a moment. Finally, Dad saved us from the silence.
So it sounds like that one couple was borderline vicious. The wife, what was her name? Sharon.
Merritt and I chorused back. Dad shook his head.
She came in with an agenda.
They all did, I said. But wasn't that the point? Everyone probably has a specific idea of how to improve their day-to-day life. The hard part wasn't that they had those thoughts. It was how they were trying to get them across. Mom nodded.
There has to be a way to do something like this without all the arguing. It slows everything down. In some ways, but in others, it adds to the discussion,
Merritt claimed.
Once they were reminded of who they were speaking with, the conversation became much clearer.
I definitely think there was more positive than negative today, I added. Dad was looking down at the table. Dad? Don't you think so? He looked up at me, smiling.
Yes, dear, I do.
He sighed, straightening his posture.
And I owe you thanks, Merritt. A move like this is certainly progress, not just for the palace, but for the country. And it was a very good idea. I will pass along your thanks to my father. He put the idea in my head years ago.
Dad grimaced.
Then I also owe you an apology.
He tapped his finger on the table, collecting his thoughts.
Please, tell your parents they needn't stay away. Just because we disagreed on methods doesn't mean...
Merritt raised his hand.
Say no more, Your Majesty. My father has said on more than one occasion that he stepped over the line. I will urge him to call. Soon.
Dad smiled.
I'd like that.
Me too, Mom added. And you are welcome to visit as often as you like, I added, especially if you have any more thoughts on how to reach our people. Merritt's face was triumphant.
Oh, I have plenty.
The following morning, I was almost first to the office, beating everyone except for General Ledger, who was rooting around rather forcefully in my father's desk drawers. General? I asked, announcing myself. He bowed curtly and went back to his search.
Sorry, your father has broken his glasses, and he said there was another pair in his desk. I'm having no luck at all.
His voice was gruff, and he shoved the drawer closed before turning around to scan the shelf behind him. General Ledger?
He said they would be here. Are they right in front of me and I'm missing them?
Sir.
One thing, that's all I had to do. I can't even find a pair of glasses.
General?
Yes,
he replied without looking at me. Are you all right?
Of course.
He searched and searched, not pausing until I laid a gentle hand on his shoulder. You wouldn't lie to my father. Please don't lie to me. He finally looked up from his task, bewilderment in his eyes.
When did you get so tall?
He asked.
And so eloquent. I feel like it was just yesterday that your mother was rushing into the room to get us to come watch your first steps.
He smiled a little.
I don't know if you know, but Aaron nearly beat you to the punch. But even back then, you weren't going to let anyone show you up.
You still haven't answered my question. Are you okay? He nodded.
I will be. I've never been good at accepting defeat, even when it was the best thing.
Lucy's actually taking this better than I am, though not by much.
He squinted.
I assume you know what I'm talking about.
I sighed. I do, but only barely. I'm embarrassed to admit, I've been so focused on myself, I didn't realize how much you'd struggled. I wish I'd been more sensitive about all this.
Don't blame yourself. We don't live in the palace, and not having a family isn't something we willingly chat about. Besides, there's nothing anyone can do about it.
Nothing?
Like I said, we're accepting defeat. In the beginning, we thought we had so much time. And when we tried to get help, it just kept falling through. Lucy can't take it anymore.
He paused, swallowing before he gave me a weak smile.
I hope I've done right by you. As an official, as a friend. You're the closest I'll ever have to a daughter, so that matters to me.
I found myself near tears, thinking of how I'd called him a backup parent not that long ago. You have. Of course you have. And not just by me, but by every other child in this palace you helped raise. He squinted. Mr. Woodwork had a broken leg when Kyle was ready to learn to ride a bike. I remember you running behind him on the gravel in front of the palace until he finally figured out how to balance. General Ledger nodded, the ghost of a grin on his face.
That's true. I did that.
And Mom and Dad were in New Asia when Caden lost his first tooth, right? Miss Lucy was the one who helped him get it out. And she taught Josie how to put on eyeliner. Don't you remember how she bragged about it for weeks?
What I remember is Marley telling her to wipe it off,
he said, his spirits rising. And you taught Aaron and Caden how to handle a saber. Caden recently suggested a duel, and the first thing I thought of was how he would have won hands down thanks to you. General Ledger watched me.
I treasure those memories, I do. I'd defend all of you to my last breath, even if I wasn't essentially paid to.
I giggled. I know, which is why there's no one else I'd trust with my life. I reached out for his hand. Please take the day off. No one's going to invade today, and if they do, I'll call you. I added quickly when I could see he was going to protest. Go spend time with Miss Lucy. Remind her of every good thing you've been to each other. And remind her of everything you've been to us. I know it's not a reasonable substitute, but do it all the same.
I haven't found the glasses yet.
I'm sure he's left them in the parlor. I'll take care of it. You go. He gripped my hand one last time before letting it go and dropping into a bow.
Yes, Your Highness.
I watched him leave, leaning against the desk as I considered the General and Miss Lucy and their life together. They'd faced so much sadness, so much disappointment, and yet he still showed up every day ready to serve. So did Miss Lucy. It was a strange thing to measure them beside my parents, whose lives had seemed to fall into place perfectly. I was surrounded by examples of how love, real love, could make you less bothered by your circumstances, whether it was facing the greatest disappointment of your life or shouldering the weight of a country. And suddenly, for the life of me, I couldn't remember why I'd been so afraid of it. I mentally thumbed through my list of suitors. Kyle's sweetness, Fox's enthusiasm, Henry's joy. These were all things that drew me in. But beyond that, was there something beautiful and lasting? I still didn't know. But finding out no longer looked so frightening. I shook the thought away for the moment and headed into the parlor. Sure enough, Dad's glasses were sitting unfolded and upside down on a pile of books. I carried them toward his room, still wondering about the future.
In an effort to keep from waking Mom in case she was sleeping, I knocked on the door to his personal study.
Yes,
he called. I walked in to find Dad at his desk, squinting at some papers. I found these, I said, holding up his glasses and wiggling them between my fingers.
Ah, you're a lifesaver. Where's Aspen?
He asked, happily taking the glasses and popping them on his face. I told him to take the day off. He seemed a little down. Dad's head snapped up.
Was he? I didn't notice.
Yes. He and I think maybe Miss Lucy are having a bad day. At the mention of her name, he seemed to understand.
Well, now I feel awful for not saying something.
He leaned back in his chair and rubbed at his temple. Have you been sleeping much? I asked, fiddling with a paperweight. He smiled.
I'm trying, honey, really. But if your mom makes so much as a peep, I'm instantly awake, and I end up watching her for an hour before I'm calm enough to sleep again. That heart attack sneaked up on us. If anything, I'd have expected for something to happen to me.
I nodded. So many times recently I'd found myself watching him, wondering if he was okay. But Mom? She blindsided us all.
Your mom keeps talking about going on the report tomorrow like it's some sign of things getting back to normal. As if, since she can do that, I should go back to work. And I know the second I go back to work, she will too. I'm not saying I want her to sit around and twiddle her thumbs, but the thought of her going back to being the queen all day, every day, I don't know how to take it.
He rubbed his eyes and gave me a humorless smile.
And the truth is, it's been nice to pause, take a breath. I don't think I realized how hard I'd been running until I had to stop.
He looked up at me.
I can't remember the last time I had 10 undisturbed hours with my wife. She's got these pretty little laugh lines by her eyes.
I smiled. Well, you tell a lot of horrible jokes, Dad. He nodded.
What can I say? I'm a man of many talents. And that's almost as hard to take. When she goes back to being queen, I need to go back to being king. And I don't know when I'll get another week like this, where it's just her and me.
So what if she didn't? He squinted.
What do you mean?
Well, it had been circulating in my head since the town hall meeting yesterday. I'd probably never be able to help all my people, but I could reach a few. That thought thrilled me more than I imagined possible. And at the very least, I could help my parents, which recently started feeling like a monumental accomplishment. Still, as the words came out, I knew they were pure insanity. What if she wasn't queen anymore? What if I was? Dad stilled, staring at me in disbelief.
I don't mean it as an insult, I stammered. I know you're fully able to lead, but you're right. Mom's going to want to go back to the complete role of being queen. If I was queen, she'd have to do something else.
His eyes widened as if he hadn't considered this option. And if she wasn't queen and you weren't king, and this time it happened to be while she wasn't recovering from a heart attack, maybe you could do more than sit around. Maybe you could travel or something. He blinked, astonished at the possibility. We could do it this week, even. I can have a coronation dress made, Lady Bryce and Nina can organize everything, and you know General Ledger would make sure the entire event was safe. You wouldn't have to worry about a thing. He swallowed, looking away. Please, Dad, I don't mean it as an insult, He held up a hand and I silenced myself, stunned to see tears in his eyes when he turned back to me.
I'm not insulted.
he answered gruffly before clearing his throat.
I'm just so proud of you.
I smiled. So, you'll let me ascend?
You'll have a difficult time,
he said seriously.
The people are restless.
I know. I'm not scared. Well, not that scared. We shared a laugh.
You'll be wonderful.
I shrugged. I'm no you, and I'm definitely no mom, but I can do this. I have help, and I'll still have the both of you, and between all of us, I'll probably come out looking like a decent queen. He shook his head.
You are more than decent, Edlin. Maybe I haven't told you enough, but you're an extraordinary young woman. Bright and funny and capable. What a privilege it will be to be your subject.
His words were so genuine that I found myself blinking back tears. I didn't realize how much his opinion of my actions mattered until that moment. I should have, though, considering how many steps I'd taken at his suggestion. It meant the world that he approved of ones I was taking on my own. He took a deep breath.
Okay, then.
Standing, he walked around the table and slid his signet ring off his ring finger and onto the middle finger of my hand. His eyes, the clearest I'd seen them in days, stared deeply into mine.
That looks rather nice on you.
I tilted my head. Nearly everything does. Chapter 16. When Mom walked into the studio on Friday evening, the entire room broke out in applause. She lifted her hand in a wave, acknowledging the support as Dad walked so close beside her, you couldn't see a speck of light between them. She had a tiny limp from where the doctors had removed the vein from her leg, but she was so graceful you really had to look to see it. She'd chosen a dress with a high neckline, and I could tell by the way she kept touching it that she was anxious about her scar. You look wonderful, I said, stepping in stride with her and Dad, trying to distract her. Thank you. So do you. How are you feeling, Dad? I leaned around her, trying to gauge his emotions. He tilted his head from side to side.
Part relieved, part nervous. Not about you, you'll do fine. I'm just concerned about the reaction.
I noted that he looked a bit more rested, and I could tell that seeing Mom all dressed up lifted his spirits. Me too, but we knew this day would come sooner or later. I'd rather do it now and help when it's most useful. Mom let out a wistful sigh. Finally out of the spotlight and into the background, she said. I've missed it there.
People will still watch, my dear,
Dad said.
Just try to keep your chin up tonight, and I'll be right beside you if you need me.
So, same as always, he smiled.
Same as always.
Look, I don't plan to kick you out or anything, but if you insist on being mushy all the time, I'll have you in a cottage faster than you can say PDA. Mom kissed my head. Good luck tonight. They made their way to the chairs while I walked across to the boys.
Your Highness.
Ian sank into a bow, his smile brighter than usual. Hello, sir.
How are you tonight?
Good, I think. It's going to be a very exciting show. He leaned in.
I'm always up for a little excitement,
he whispered. Ian smelled of aftershave and tobacco, and as there had been since the moment we'd met, something slightly hypnotic filled the air around him. I've been very busy lately, but I've been wondering if you and I should have a date soon. He shrugged.
Only if you want one. As I said, I have no intention of demanding anything from you.
So you're quite comfortable?
I am.
He answered with a smile.
And, as always, I'm here for you in whatever capacity you need me.
He bowed and walked away, sitting down next to Hale, who whispered something to Ian as he approached. I watched Ian shake his head in reply. Hale looked unsettled, and I realized we hadn't spoken since our disaster of a date. I wasn't sure if I was ready to cross that bridge yet. I walked over to my small group of suitors all the same.
"It's so great to see the Queen back," Fox said.
I beamed. "It is. She'll be giving a small update about her condition. There will be the normal notes from the advisors. Then my father will be making a big announcement. You're off the hook for tonight."
"Thank goodness."
Kyle slumped back in his seat, grinning. I chuckled. "I know the feeling. So just sit there and look handsome."
"Done,"
Ian joked, a thing I hadn't thought him capable of doing. Hale laughed and Henry smiled, though his expression showed me that he didn't understand what had happened. I started walking away, shaking my head as I went, when I was caught by the light brush of fingers across my wrist.
"I'm sorry, Your Highness," Eric said. "I was wondering if I should sit with the audience since there won't be any questions tonight."
His blue eyes caught the bright lights of the studio, brilliant and clear. "Are you afraid I'll drag you into the middle of the set if you don't hide?" He chuckled.
"More than you know."
"Don't worry, you're safe. But Henry will need to understand my father's announcement, so stay close." He nodded.
"I will." "Are you all right? You look a little on edge."
"I am, very much," I confessed.
"Anything I can do for you?"
I placed a hand on his shoulder. "Cross your fingers. It's going to be an interesting night." I took my seat next to Mom, looking out at the small crowd. Josie's clothing choice baffled me once again. She was covered in so many sequins, one might have thought she was going to be on camera tonight. Maybe that was her plan, to be prepared in case it ever happened. General Ledger usually stood, but tonight he was seated next to Miss Lucy, and she leaned into him. He turned his head slightly to give her the gentlest kiss along her hairline. Neither of them looked at each other or spoke, but I could tell there was some wordless communication happening, and they both seemed lost in the moment. I could have watched them for hours, but I got distracted. Caden waved wildly, holding two thumbs up, and I smirked, giving him a small wave in reply.
"If he's that excited about what's coming, imagine how excited Aaron will be when he hears."
Mom tugged at her necklace again, arranging all her protective layers. "Yeah," I answered lamely, thinking that if he couldn't even call me to tell me how he was, he might not be excited at all. The cameras rolled,